Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about something that's changing the game for women in dental leadership. It's called the Empowered Leadership Experience for Women in Dental. It's a six-month transformational journey for women who are done with burnout, over-functioning, and trying to lead like someone they're not. This isn't just another leadership training. It's a coming home to your voice, your power, and your joy. If you've ever felt alone at the top or stuck somewhere in the middle, this one's for you. Enrollment is now open. Head to leadhership-experience.com to enroll. Because real leadership isn't about performing. It's about remembering who you are. Now, let's get into today's episode. Crystal Spring is a registered dental hygienist and the founder of Smiles Across Montana, a non-for-profit that helps vulnerable communities, not only with their oral care, but even screening to some degree, mental health and their overall health, because her and her team of 30 plus dedicated professionals are, for some of these people, the only access to healthcare that they'll see for many years. She has an incredible heart, an insane drive and passion for giving voices to the voiceless and helping people that need the help the most. She also has a really beautiful and unique view on the dental industry and what it needs because of her perspective in supporting and helping some of these vulnerable populations. She's an incredible speaker. She's an advocate. She's a consultant. But most importantly, she is a leader in this industry when it comes to what dentistry really can be all about. And her perspective is one that I really, really admire. I respect to the highest degree, and she's somebody that you will want to know. And also, if you're interested, there's also going to be information at the end of this podcast and how you can donate and support her mission in helping these vulnerable populations throughout the state of Montana. And hey, maybe it'll inspire you to make a difference in your community as well. This is needed right here in the United States, and there's access to lend a helping hand in our industry. And so I'm really excited for you to meet Crystal if you haven't already and hear about the incredible difference that she's making in our industry. Let's dive in. Crystal, so pumped to have you with me today. Really excited for today's conversation because you are the epitome of a real talker and you always drop some mega truth bombs and have such an honest, beautiful perspective of the industry. So I can't wait to dive into some really important topics, one of which is the mobile clinic that you lead and run. And so share a little bit about how you got involved in the mobile clinic and the type of dentistry that you're doing now and how you're serving the populations that you're serving.
So I've been a hygienist, I don't know how, like 28 years now. That's a really, really long time. I have been running my own nonprofit for 8 years now. So like, that's crazy. That just flew by. Yeah. But I've been in public health solely for almost 11 years, I think. So it's been a crazy journey. But how this became my life is I was a dental hygienist that worked 2 days a week when my kids were little. I loved my boss. I loved working where I did. But I definitely saw a need when I started working at a nursing facility first. I worked what we have in Montana is called a limited access permit. I got that and was able to work in the nursing facility that my grandma lived in. So I had my grandparents were, they both passed, like three of them actually passed in nursing facilities. And so I knew nursing facilities really well. I grew up going to them and it just made sense. I love older people too. And I think some of us are just called to serve. I think I'm mentally just a better human when I'm serving other people. And My little brother is intellectually disabled. He was born, he had asphyxia at birth. So I'd always volunteered for the Special Olympics. I ran the Special Smiles in my state for a lot of years. I've just always been really service driven. But what really sparked this is there was a Facebook post online. It was my first cousin who lives up on the Fort Peck Indian Reservation in northeastern Montana. That's where I grew up. And she had waited in line all day at Indian Health Service to get in for a cleaning. And this is an amazing person with 2 degrees, and she's just an awesome professional. And she has an autoimmune disease and she couldn't be seen. And I was like, well, I'll come help you. And from that, you can't just come and work for a government agency part-time. And that's all I could really do because Montana is a huge state. I actually live 460 miles from my hometown. Not an easy place to get to. So I actually contacted somebody from Tribal Health there, a good friend, Kenny Smoker. And I went up and I actually saw their school-based clinics. And from the very first day I ever worked at one of their clinics, I just knew, I saw just a couple kids and something in me just hit that I knew I'd be doing this for the rest of my life. I knew I would be doing nothing else but public health. It just hit. I saw how needed it was. I remember calling my husband and having to tell him, like I was crying because it was like, oh my goodness, we have small kids. And I'm going to tell you that I'm going to take off at least a week every month for the rest of whenever to go and work up on the reservation or work in my hometown. And it just kind of sparked from that.
That's incredible. Yeah, you bring such an amazing perspective being in the public health space and also so much wisdom around access to care. So you had this calling, you had this really intense experience. And then did you actually start the nonprofit or did this exist? And then you ended up in the position you are today leading it? Or tell us a little bit about the trajectory of how you ended up in the leadership role you're in today.
So I've got a big mouth, like, and if I'm doing something, I want, if I love it, I want everyone to do it. So I had recruited so many dental hygienists and dentists from Montana to come up to Fort Peck. And there was a changeover in our tribal board and we weren't able to get our contract signed to come up there anymore. And, you know, I was just looking because I wanted to do stuff all the time. So I went from working 2 days a week to I essentially, I don't remember the last time I didn't work 6 days a week. I'm a little bit crazy. My husband's had to ask me not to call people on Sundays. It's a day of rest for people. I'm like, but I can tell they want to talk. And so essentially, I just started looking and, you know, it was another hygienist and I. So we didn't even think Dennis would want to like help us with this. And so we actually just started a business where we were going to be going in as these limited access permit hygienists. And we started out, places started contacting us right away. And from there, we actually added the nonprofit side because it's really hard to sustain. Like she and I made no money for a really long time. Like we couldn't even pay ourselves. We paid to go places. I will say something, I'm probably one of the only, I think there's 3 hygienists in the state of Montana who've ever had a complaint against their license. I'm one of them. It was people didn't like what we were doing. It's this whole hygiene, dental, like just weirdness that goes on. We had a complaint that said that we were working in a place where they thought it was a daycare, but it wasn't. It was actually a federally funded program under DPHHS. They were actually poor. You had to be poorer than the parameters for being in Head Start. So we had every right to be in there, but it took about 3 months for that to be solidified. And, you know, I just decided then and there, like we started asking dentists to join our program and they did. And to me, that's always felt like the way we should be doing things. So our team works under the general supervision of dentists and our team's really happy that way. But that's how it got started. You know, there's always a little bit of turmoil. I have actually thought back a couple times and I think any entrepreneur would tell you this. If I had to start over, I wouldn't do it. If I knew how hard it was going to be, I came in with really like save the world kind of feelings. I'm glad and proud of how I've survived and how we prospered, but it has been a lot of work.
Yeah, I bet. And with that, you're starting out as a hygienist who is humanitarian as well, huge heart, tons of compassion, lots of empathy. Like, you're being led into this career or this part of your career. And now all of a sudden you're in this leadership position. And, you know, when we were chatting before we got started, I think you said now you're leading up to 30 people that see you as, you know, you are their point person, you are their leader. And that's probably something you didn't know you were signing up for also because you were following your heart, right? And you were following this need and this calling. So what has been the biggest thing for you stepping into the position of leader and not just your average leader? I mean, you're leading a huge monumental effort, right? With a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, I think, you know, I always got along so well with the dentist I work for, and I always kind of got it. My husband owns a small business. I knew what it took to be the boss. I know that you're the person who doesn't get paid at the end of the day if you can't pay everybody else. So I went in like thinking I understood what it was like to be the boss or be the leader. And, you know, I think some of the things that have been the hardest is I love people. I love being part of the team. And sometimes I don't get to be liked, and that kind of stinks, because if you know me, I just really want you to like me. And so that part's been hard, you know, or having to always be working on yourself, because I need to be such a good leader because I'm growing other leaders. You know, our team is getting so big. We have regional directors and we have all these people that I've had to get leadership training for. We have to, you know, meet separately and talk about the hard things that have nothing to do with just running a dental office. We have to talk about, you know, how we manage, how we show up. So it's been, I feel like I'm a natural leader because that's kind of my style. I would just come in, and if somebody else didn't have a plan, I'd probably start bossing everybody around, you know. You know, I'm very, very efficient, like, let's go. So I feel that way I'm a natural leader, but it is hard, you know, all the things that go into it. Like I said, I like to be liked. I love to be part of the team, and just to have to sit and, I don't know, I think I've grown so much as a person from being a leader though, and really not putting myself first, putting the team first. And we're really mission-based. So every decision that we make, so we were a business and a nonprofit, and I just changed it to just be a nonprofit here. And as we expand and we're looking at doing some stuff into some other states, yeah, we will have a for-profit and a nonprofit side, because I love the nonprofit world also. But yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy ride.
Yeah, I can imagine. And speaking of that, I also imagine too, like, you know, so many leaders struggle with the people pleasing and the wanting to be liked and, you know, to have fun and fit in with everybody. And, you know, they often say it gets lonely at the top. And at one point, there's so much camaraderie and you're part of the fold. And then people don't always want to be around you so much anymore when you become the leader, because they just see you differently and things like that. But also knowing that you're part of this bigger mission, right? So you can shift it to being more mission focused and, hey, this is what's better for the cause and this is what's better for what we're trying to do. Even though we might not like it, this still serves the bigger picture. So I imagine you're juggling those two things all the time.
There's so many things that you have to be thinking about all the time. We went through Medicaid unwinding about 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and like, we were in just a really, really hard spot. I mean, it was hard on the whole team, and I couldn't sleep. You know, I think it was like $80,000 in the hole. Like, I didn't want to tell my husband, because that was actually our money, like his retirement money, you know, and I just kept going at it. But I think just knowing our mission, and, you know, it was just a hard year, and we've so recovered from that. We've been through so much that I'm just really proud of, not just myself. I always make it about the entire team, because I'm not actually in clinic very much, and I miss it. I do miss it. Every once in a while I'll go in, but like we said earlier, if I go in, it just creates this whole chaos for the whole team. I think everyone hates their job the day that Crystal comes, and I'm like, but I'm so fun, you know?
You know, something that is really tough right now, especially amongst hygienists, is the conversation around, you know, access to care and who can perform hygiene at a clinical level. And you have a really different perspective, because you are in areas where it is really challenging for people to get the care that they need. What is your position now with some of the changes that you're seeing, even in, you know, the sense of policy as it relates to hygienists and who can see patients clinically and the hygiene shortage, I suppose, and how that's impacting the industry?
I mean, I do love to speak to this. You know, I think it's really hard because, you know, I am a hygienist. I love dental hygiene. I respect so much of what we go to school for, that we are the ultimate in prevention specialists. But at the same time, we need to elevate the entire team. I mean, there's things that hygienists should be able to do, and I want to see them be able to do that. But when we go into an area, so most of America is actually so there's your health provider shortage areas or your HIPSAs, but like if you look at the dental side of that, it's even worse. We go into communities, there's so many people who've never been to the dentist, and we see those people. And I think if COVID taught us anything is that your oral health is part of your overall health. Like everybody knows that. I don't really know if there are less hygienists or just more people who actually want to get dental treatment now. I mean, I'd love to see all the different numbers because I don't know a ton of hygienists that actually just retired during that time. I think that, you know, our dental associations and our hygiene associations are really working hard on these compacts to make it so people can move to new areas and be able to actually work as a dental hygienist or a dentist. Like that is so difficult. A lot of people moved into small states like Montana and they're not working anymore because it's hard to get a license. One of my aunts was a dental hygienist and they moved all over the country with my uncle's job. He was in the Air Force. And the amount of money and testing that my aunt had to take, I mean, I don't think most hygienists would do it. I don't think most dentists would do it after a while. It's a lot of money and a lot of work. And I think that there's a lot of shortages because of even things like that. But I think about the Dental Association bringing forth the OPA, and I've had people ask me, you know, what I think of it. Well, it's definitely something that's needed. We do need expanded workforce for everyone, and I don't want my fellow hygienists to hate me for saying that, but I have people that I don't know what else to do. We're doing everything we can to be as efficient as possible. We just cannot see all the people. There's so many people to see that don't have access to care. And I think about like Mission to Mercies too. Think about how many Americans go in, you know. So definitely if things were worked out and you could have OPAs in Montana, we would utilize them. But we would also utilize hygienists to, there's so much more that hygienists should be able to do also. So I think it's expanding everybody's duties and capabilities. I really think it's important, yeah. And it's important to me that we bring the dental community back together, because not getting along, it doesn't get us anywhere and it just hurts our patients. And I work in public health, and when you're in public health, you don't have, like, we need big, fast movements to make change. So that's just really important. We've actually added community healthcare workers. We actually have them go through just somebody off the street. We train them they get a community healthcare worker training. I think it's like 14 weeks or something through MSU. And then we add a dental component onto that. And we even add a behavioral health component onto that, because when we see patients that are often not going to any other medical professional. So our dental hygienists, our dental teams are the only healthcare provider this patient sees. So it is important that we're not just looking at their health history to see if they're a go, like go ahead and treat them. We have to really be thinking and think. I like to think about all of our patients like they're my family. What if this was my child's only chance to be seen by someone? So we don't skip anything. I think people think that public health and mobile is less than, they think it's subpar. I just go crazy with that, because I would guarantee you anyone who comes to any of our clinics, I have the most amazing team, and they're not skipping. They're doing so much more than I've seen a lot of dental offices do. So I don't know if I answered your question. You know, we do need expanded workforce, but dentistry just needs to come together.
Yeah, share a little bit more about that, in the sense of, like, it sounds like there's a lot of infighting going on in dental right now. Is it particularly among hygienists, and a lot of differing opinions on how hygienists should be seen or treated, or where is the primary divide from your perspective?
I think that there's been bills brought up that essentially say, you know, training hygienists on the job. Come on, we know hygienists are like, we're the same as nurses. Our schooling is really hard. Like when I was getting into dental hygiene school, you couldn't have a B. Come on. You know, I didn't go to junior college. I went to a university. I have a bachelor's. And not that there's anything wrong with junior college, but they always make it sound like it's less. And dental hygienists are well educated. And I don't think anyone really just thinks that dental hygienists are just tooth scrapers, but that is a huge part of our job. And it's kind of a threat. I just think it's the way that it's brought up. I feel like I understand the need for expanded functions for other things. I think that it's just, it's never a conversation that's really about problem solving. It always seems like a power struggle to me. And I like everybody on both sides, but I feel like a lot of time is wasted that way, just with this power struggle between hygiene and dental or the dentist.
Yeah, because a lot of hygienists want, like we were saying earlier, they really want their own autonomy, right? Like they don't want to be, I guess, micromanaged or being told how to treat patients, essentially. Is that one of the issues as well?
You know, I don't really think it's that so much. I think that, you know, there aren't a lot of people or businesses working in the places these hygienists want to work. Like look at California's model. They have the RDHAP, their advanced practice. Like these are amazing hygienists. They're working, they're taking care of people that would never be seen anywhere else. And there wasn't really a road to that without them having their autonomy. And also dental hygienists, like we're very close to nursing. That's the main thing that I can just really compare it to. And they have their own board, but we're under a board of dentistry. And I can't think of anybody who would be harder on dental hygienists and making sure people are following the rules than other hygienists. So that, like, I even laugh about like me having a complaint against our license because there is no way we would have been working in the wrong place. Like yeah. We read everything, you know, and I guess you could go back to maybe there's a couple rogue hygienists out there, a couple rogue dentists that would do whatever. But I don't think that's so much of the case. I think that a lot of the hygienists that are wanting to work autonomously, it's because they want to serve. I think that there is a little fear. And I think that if you look at Colorado, dental hygienists can own their own practices. And that's not what the majority does, and they've been able to do that for, is it 20 or 30 years? It's a really long time. But I don't want to get into like the craziness of all of that, but I just do think that dentistry does have to give a little and take a little and to actually get something done.
Yeah, and in your sort of ideal scenario with, you know, the populations that you serve and the amount of, you know, effort and output that you guys are doing on a daily basis and keeping in mind, you know, what some of the other hygiene camps are pursuing and what they want. What do you have an idea of what that utopia would look like for hygiene where everyone's seen and represented and patient care is met at the same time?
So, I mean, I even look at like dental hygiene diagnosis. Most states don't have that. I've worked with some amazing dentists and they actually come to their hygienists. Like, what do you think about this? I worked in perio for years, like yeah. A good working relationship. It's out there. The laws just don't support it. Yeah, I think it would be everybody coming to the table at their best. I look at a lot of DSOs and a lot of public health. You don't see the same friction between the members of the dental team. They're just a team. I think some of it is, you know, just a little bit of fear. And I want to say that with the greatest respect to dentists, too. I'm not trying to, you know, say that they, you know, it's only about money, you know, because there's so much more that goes into everything. But I do think that we have to give a little to get the things that we need to. Yeah, especially like working with perio patients. But that's not what the OPA is for. It's scaling 0 to 18. And I guess if you look at most states, most pediatric offices are already doing that also. That's, I don't know, I don't think it's legal, or maybe it is, but like most pediatric offices don't have a dental hygienist. They have their assistant scaling, and then the dentist will come in and get what sub. You know, I'm not even gonna go there. We don't do that because I'm not comfortable doing that. Like I'm not comfortable breaking anything that I might even think it would be breaking a rule. We don't go there. But would it be helpful? Yeah.
Yeah.
Would it be helpful when we can't get to all the patients? And, you know, it's hard to just think of, and I know in some respects, hygienists have just become like they're only scaling. And if you've ever spent a lot of time working in that capacity, that's really hard on your body. Dentistry in general is hard on your body. But I do believe there are ways that the entire team can work together. I've worked in offices like that. It's out there. We just have to find it and recreate it all over the place.
Mm-hmm. What has been your biggest surprise since stepping into this world of mobile dentistry and leadership and public health? Like, what's shocked you the most personally and within the industry?
I have to say, maybe not what shocked me the most, but like the biggest, like a most amazing thing going on is minimally invasive dentistry and the whole idea of healing over drilling and like what you can do to actually heal teeth. That to me is just the mind-blowing game changer that we've needed for a long time. And I've been using silver diamine fluoride and talking about it. Like, I think I first heard about it was at a symposium with Jeremy Horst and Peter Milgram, and all these amazing humans were there. I think Shurtcliffe was there, just this really amazing group of people. And I got to be at the symposium back in 2015. And now, like, the studies that I believe it's Advantage Arrest helped with, or Elevate Oral Care helped with, like Margarita Fontana just finished last year this study just showing how safe SDF is and how many new products are coming out. Like, I think it's so exciting because I've known for a long time that these things work this way, like that they actually did work. We'll have new people on our team, and if they haven't used some of these medicaments, so think about it as the penicillin of dentistry. If they haven't used these medicaments, they really don't believe in it. And I can even see it in their eyes, or just a little bit like, you're crazy. And unfortunately, I put that off too. So I can see why they think it. They're like, oh yeah, she's healing this. But you know, they'll see a patient for the first time, and then they'll see them back a couple months later, and they can touch it, you know, tap the tooth with their probe, and it's hard. I mean, that's crazy to think that you actually remineralize something or you arrested something and now it's hard, and they might not have to have all the cavity drilled away. And it's just so much easier on the patients. And it's quicker, and the patients are happier. And I'm really finding that it's catching on. Like, someone this morning just sent me something. The new ADA president is in some other country. I think it's like an International Dental Association meeting right now. And those are the things they're talking about. They're talking about minimally invasive dentistry. Like, I was really excited to hear that because, yeah, that's where it's going. And that's where we all need to be.
Yeah, that's really exciting. That's amazing. And I'm sure, like, yeah, and with the patients that you're supporting and helping, it makes it a little bit easier for you guys too with having more advanced ways to care for them, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you go into a situation and you see a kid and you know that if you don't do something, it'll be bigger the next time you come in. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just remember like the first times we were able to use SDF. And now we use SDF, but we also use this nano silver fluoride that doesn't stain. We use a ton of Curadont. I just found out another product from Greenmark that also remineralizes. Like, there's so much out there. It's so exciting. But when I first started doing this, there was nothing. What we did use a lot were glass ionomers, because those actually are like, we don't use anything else for in our sealant programs than glass ionomers because of the way they bind chemically and mechanically. It just makes too much sense for us not to use, or I don't know how I'm going to say that, but that's all we use because that's what makes sense. And I think that that's, to me, that's the most exciting thing that I've seen going on in forever. And just to get to be a part of it and watch it happen. And I think it's going to be good for dentistry, too. Like, dental offices don't like having to drill on everything all the time. I think it's going to take our pay systems a bit to catch up because we're used to doing dentistry in a certain way. But I see it coming, and I think it's so exciting.
Yeah. And that leads me to think, like, what are ways that people, you know, can support you, you and your mobile clinic and your team? And if people listening to this want to support your mission, what is the best way, and what do you all need in those levels of support?
Love that. I'm the worst fundraiser in the history of fundraising, though. If I'm supposed to be asking someone for money, I'll be like, have my own checkbook out by the time it's over.
Yeah.
But so we had our first like really large mission clinic last year. We did it last March. We did it centered around there's a big Native American powwow. It's intertribal here in Bozeman at Montana State. I was contacted. This is kind of a long story, but I'm just going to tell you. I was contacted by a dentist in the Cincinnati area. Her daughter had taken her own life last summer, so it was a year ago, and she'd always wanted her mom to give back to the Native American community in Montana. So her mom just reached out to me, and we created this mission clinic that this will be our second year, and it's centered around mental health. We started asking our patients the hard questions. We're really careful to make sure that people don't think they had a mental health assessment, but we're asking our patients, and you know, how are you doing? You know, a lot of times when you see someone and it doesn't look like they're brushing their teeth, it's depression. There's so much going on around it. So we started doing that on a more consistent basis when we were doing this clinic. And unfortunately, as we were doing this clinic, it was last March, end of March, one of my really good friends and one of my 19-year-old son's best friends that he grew up with had taken his own life 2 days before our clinic started. And we were in a church and the funeral was in the same place. It just really hit home to how big it is in what we do in dentistry, because so often, like now, we might be the only health provider this patient sees. We do need to ask these questions and we do need to have the resources. Like, this is a suicide hotline, or your school has this. There's just way too much that we have to do when you work in mobile and you're bringing access to care. I think anyone you'd ask that actually works in areas where you don't have access to dental or medical treatments, you're going to see your job is a lot bigger. It's a lot harder. There's a lot more responsibility. And that being said, you can get what's called a volunteer license in Montana. I think it's $20. We had dentists and hygienists from all over the place last year come in and help us. So tons of friends, tons of dentists. It was really cool. And this year we're doing it a little different. We've come together with Remote Area Medical and MSU. And so we're going to be doing vision screenings and people will be getting glasses, and there's a lot of different health screenings. And then we're going to be doing dental there as well. And it's going to be really, really exciting. So we just got that contract signed with MSU the other day and we're so excited. It's March 28th and 29th. And if that's not a time that works for you, you can always get a volunteer license. And, you know, we would love to have you come and check out what we do. And you can actually get in there and help us a little bit, help to make a difference in some of these communities. So I can't even think of how many counties we're in, but we're in like all four corners of our state, and this state is huge. And, yes. You know, I think our database has around 9,000 patients in it right now. There's about 30 people who work for us that are just really making a difference. And, you know, we've had some dental hygiene schools come and help us. It's amazing. So, like, just reach out to me. I think our Instagram is Smiles Across Montana and mine's Crystal Loves Dental, but like anyone who wants to reach out and come and be a part of it. Something else, like a lot of companies will, you know, send us supplies. So we are a nonprofit and there's never been a harder time than lately. A lot of grant funding has been canceled for a lot of your universities and things like that. So it's gotten a lot harder to get the same grants. And that is something that scares me a little. So just anything anyone can do or wants to do to help, it'd be amazing.
Yeah, that's incredible. So people that actually want to come and serve is a great way to help. Donations is another great way to help, as in donating supplies. And then I assume money as well would be a great help. Is that right?
Yes, money is. Yeah, money would be amazing.
You can buy stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where it gets hard for me. I'm like, oh, yes, money would be amazing. And, you know, we are accountable for every dollar that comes in. We run a pretty tight ship and any money that's given goes straight to the kids. So that's yeah. Really fun. So we mainly see kids. We see kids 0 to 18 because we see like kids that are in Head Starts, like even early Head Starts. But then we also go into some nursing facilities. We ran a couple clinics this summer centered around veteran care. You know, we do it all. We did essentially a couple migrant clinics too. Just there's such a need everywhere.
Yeah. Gosh, Crystal, it's so incredible what you and your team are doing and how much it's grown, you know, since you started this, you said 8 years ago. I'm sure it feels like a blip in time, because even for me, 8 years seems like a long time, but not a long time at the same time. And I know just witnessing you from over here and the awards you've received and just the acknowledgement. And I know it's on behalf of, you know, the mission and your team and everything you're working towards. But the fact that you've been such a voice for the voiceless is something that I admire so much. And just your level of commitment. You don't quit, even on days that I'm sure that you want to. And just who you are in the industry is such a light and a beacon of what's possible. So I'm really grateful that you're out there doing what you're doing, and I just really admire you so much. So thanks for everything you're doing.
Thank you. No, thank you for that. And thank you for having an awesome podcast that talks about real stuff, because that's also really important.
Yeah, and thank you for being a representative for parts of dentistry that most people aren't talking about. So thank you so much. You're amazing. I'm so glad that you're with me today, and I appreciate all your time.
And this was fun. This was fun. And yeah, anything you need from me, always reach out. I'm here. And thanks for highlighting what we do. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Anytime. Thanks, Crystal.
You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices. It's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess, that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.